Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
To this day, and especially in the last couple of weeks, as I've gotten to see them again and talk to them, and we hung out together, you know, they would say, "Hey, Coach, you were a lifesaver. You may not have realized it, but you helped me, you know, immensely, just in their individual journeys." You know, when I hear that stuff, it really makes me feel good.
And our guest this week is Bob Lynch, who has retired after spending the last 35 years as the head men's golf coach at St. Joseph's University. And Bob, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thank you, Matt. Pleasure to be here.
So, such a career that we will talk about. Why was this the right time to step aside?
I think it was a combination of realizing that 35 was enough, that the game is changing, the technology is changing, and I think it's probably already passed me by, but we were able to find somebody that we were happy with to take over, and it was time.
Was this something that you started kind of seeing it come together a few years ago, or was this something that you kind of hit you in a moment and you started to process and you thought, okay, I think this is a good time?
Yeah, I would say it started maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. A couple of my former players, Terry Scollin and Brendan Young, came to me. We had a little heart-to-heart chat and asked me how long I thought I want to stick at it. And I said I wasn't planning on leaving tomorrow, so they kind of both expressed an interest in getting more involved with the program, because for the first 33 years, it was pretty much a one-man show. I didn't have any assistant coaches. It was hard enough to be a head coach on a part-time basis, let alone have someone else with me that could kind of do that as well. I just happened to have a job that allowed me the flexibility. So that worked out. And those guys said that they would like to get involved a little more. And Terry was the one who said, yeah, I'm at a stage in my career that my kids are older now and I'm established in real estate. So I would have maybe that time to devote, because we kind of thought that St. Joe's wasn't quite ready for a full-time position. So Terry expressed an interest, and I thought, all right, let's get started. And his first year, he was a volunteer assistant last year, and then this year we brought him on as a very small paid assistant coach, and he traveled with us and practiced, and we thought, well, he's good, he's interested, and it's time. So it just kind of worked out real good that way.
How was the last
few weeks for you from an emotional standpoint? Did you look at things like, well, this is the last time I'll be doing this here, this is the last time I'll be doing that? Or did you kind of wall that off as much as you could?
No, it hit me pretty good. I'm a pretty emotional guy and can get quite teary-eyed at times. But yeah, this spring season, you know, I looked at the Princeton Invitational, which we had in early April. It's one of my favorites. It's always been one of my favorites to go to. The teams that are there are very competitive, and it's just accumulated over the years that the friendships that I've established with the other coaches and players, that's one tournament that they kind of all come together. So realizing that, you know, that tournament would be the last to see maybe some of the coaches. We see some of the Ivy League coaches at other tournaments, but that's one that they all pretty much come together, and we have a good time. You know, it's a lot of fun. And then I didn't think too much about the Villanova tournament being our last local tournament. Majority of our tournaments, obviously, we travel to these invitationals. Temple does host a local tournament in the fall. Villanova has hosted one in the spring. And I didn't give it much thought that, hey, this is the last time that maybe some friends and family can come out and watch. And then the last day of the tournament is when it hit pretty good. And it was a beautiful day, sunny and warm, and people started showing up one by one, and it kind of dawned on me then that maybe they're coming to, maybe not to watch the kids play, but to, you know, say hello to me or something, or goodbye to me. So, and then our Atlantic 10 tournament, realizing that was the last time we fly together and go to a nice place like Florida and see again our conference, my fellow conference coaches. So yeah, it's been a pretty crazy 3 weeks to a month, I would say.
And while your time at St. Joe's is done, you're still working at Spike's Trophies,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah, I'm still going to hang on to that. I'm not ready to fully retire, but Spike's allows me the flexibility to do the traveling and be with the team, you know, afternoons at practice and traveling. So I will still continue to do that.
Talk to me a little bit about, in grand terms, your role as a golf coach. How much of it is working mechanics, swing, stuff like that? How much of it is kind of shoulder for players to kind of talk through things with you, strategy? You know, how much of it is cheerleader? Is it a combination of all that? Like, if you had to kind of distill the job of collegiate golf coach in your eyes, like, how does it break down?
You named probably the three segments, and I'd start with the shoulder and the cheerleader part being a good majority of it for me personally. And I think for a lot of coaches, whether it's D3, D2, or D1, especially in our neck of the woods, in our area, the majority of the coaches may not be as mechanical. Nowadays, kids seem to come to school with their own swing coaches and their psychologists and their trainers. So they come pretty well prepared to take that next step after high school. So I was never much of a swing guru, and I'm very upfront with the kids, you know, when they're being recruited or when they're looking at St. Joe's as a possibility, that, hey, don't choose St. Joe's thinking that you're going to go from a 5 handicap to a scratch, like, overnight. That's probably not going to happen here. I'll help you with things. I do know the game and know the mechanics, but I was never taught formally a lot of the different techniques of the swing. I mean, I'm not a very good player myself, but I enjoy the game, and I think that's what Don DeJulia and Alan Ryan saw in me back 35 years ago, that I was interested, I was excited about the game, and could give a shoulder to the kids. My good buddy Marty Farrell always makes a comment that he was a senior the year prior to me coming on board, and Alan Ryan, who was an assistant AD at the time, and I were pretty good friends, and we played some golf together. She was a member at Philly Country Club. And we, you know, we'd hit it sideways together. And she asked me that one summer if I wanted to coach the golf team. And I said, excuse me? I said, you just saw me shoot, you know, 95. And you don't have to be a PGA professional. Or she said, no, you need to be, we're looking for stability. We're looking for someone who can come in and, you know, just be with the kids, set a schedule, be there, make sure they get to places what they need to get to, set practice schedules, drive the van, give out meal money, you know. So I thought, I could do all that. Let me give it a shot. And never realizing that it would last 35 years, but it was it was a lot of fun. And to answer your question, the shoulder is a big part for these kids. I think these days the game is as mental. It's 50% mental and 50% talent probably, but I don't know if those percentages are correct, but the mental is a big part in golf. And so they need times to get settled down and need somebody to talk to. So that's kind of how I fit in, and it kind of worked for a long time.
So prior to that conversation in that moment, coaching was not something that was ever on your radar?
No, I didn't grow up. I coached, little league t-ball and basketball, CYO and things like that. Grew up in a sports family, and we were primarily basketball people, and still love to this day love basketball. But yeah, golf was just a. I played in high school. I played my senior year at Father Judge High School here in the city, and that was fun. And I did okay, but went to LaSalle College back then, and had no thought of even trying out for the golf team. But continued playing and continued enjoying the sport. But never dawned on me that one day I'd be a Division I college golf coach.
What was your introduction to golf growing up?
My father, God rest his soul, got me started probably when I was in eighth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. He actually passed away when I was in eighth grade. But so it was just a couple years when we would go to John F. Byrne, or the Quartet Club back in the day was a little par three course up in the Northeast. Yeah, so he got me started. He was an avid golfer, and it just kind of blossomed from there.
It's fascinating that, you talk about your sports family, but, your father introducing you and passing close to when he introduced you, that's a strong connection that almost makes it seem so special that's, regardless of design, kind of the path how you ended up on of all the sports you were interested in.
Yeah, you're right. We didn't get a whole lot of time. We didn't play a lot of outings or actually just go out one-on-one. But it was something we would watch on TV together, I can vaguely remember, and play. And you're right. It's kind of strange how things transpired from there.
As a player, what were your strengths? I know you said you weren't real good, but if you were recruiting yourself, like, what would be the bullet points of the best parts of your game?
Yeah, I guess I would say my short game. I'm not a big guy. I'm not a strong guy, so I can't hit it nearly as far as these kids today. Boy, they can really hit it. And it has to do with their flexibility, and how fast they can get at the ball. So I was never that type of player, but I could chip and putt, as they say, and even now putting, obviously, even the best players in the world, if they're not putting good, they're not winning. So I would say, if I was recruiting myself, I'd say get longer, but keep that short game sharp,
So when you come on board 35 years ago, kind of what was the environment? You kind of talked about the things they were looking for the coach to do, and much of it was just kind of making the trains run on time, for lack of a better term. But like, how were the players then compared to the players on your first team and the players on your last team? And I don't necessarily mean talent, but I mean focus, how big a part of their life was golf, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think back then it was a way that they could compete with their, fellow teammates, but they saw it as an opportunity to travel, to see other schools. They were all good high school players in their own right and wanted to pursue a good education, obviously, was number one. And to this day, that's our big selling point, is not necessarily, you know, we're going to win a national championship, but it's, you know, you come to St. Joseph's and you'll get a great education, number one. And that was, and even now, that's still the number one option for the kids. But yeah, they back then, I think it was more getting to know the coaches that hosted tournaments. Although when I first started, we kind of played matches. Mm-hmm. We would have a try match between, you know, with us, LaSalle and Villanova, and then it would be us, Lehigh and Lafayette, and then it would be us, Textile and Widener, and we'd have, you know, a couple of those matches in the fall and a couple in the spring, but it evolved into invitational tournaments and 2 and 3 day tournaments. And I think that we got more serious about things. We needed more money budget wise to do the things we wanted to do, which the school helped us with. So I think over time, kids just, they got the scores. When I first started, I would tell a golfer, a high school golfer, if you could shoot, you know, 75 to 80, you can play here and we'll be able to compete. You know, and that just got better and better and better. And 75 to 80 is not going to get you very far these days. So, yeah, and with the technology, I mean, kids just, as we talked about earlier, they got stronger, they got faster, they got the clubs helped you, you know, the balls helped. So the courses that we started to play were better. So the conditions were better. And I think all that combined just took my initial years from, you know, again, just driving the van to being a little more critical and a little more, you know, serious that you know, these kids need an opportunity to play better talent. And that's kind of how I guess we've grown.
And I wanted to ask, because when reading up on you, I saw a breakdown where you guys used to play, as you mentioned, those, you know, kind of try meets, stuff like that, and then more the invitational. Was that to raise the level of competition? Was it by design? Was it something that just kind of happened over the years? Or was it something that you and the program wanted to make a point that this is probably where we can have the highest success and face the best competition?
I think it's a combination of that. I think it evolved. It evolved that way. It wasn't anything that I did in particular. But as I grew with the sport and got to meet other coaches and talk to them and understand how they ran their programs. Tommy Hunter, one of my good buddies from Georgetown, and because we go back, he actually started before I did. So he was one of the first guys that helped me and guide me to say, Bobby, give this coach a call or check out with this school. You know, they have a tournament that they host in April, you know, that you might want to go to. So those things happened, but the sport in general just evolved, and they started out as maybe an 18-hole tournament one day, and then from that they went to 36-hole day tournaments, and then from that a lot of them are 54-hole tournaments these days, which kind of can be a little grueling, and we play 36 holes in one day in not so nice weather. And you're at the course, and you know, when the sun comes up, and you're at the course when the sun goes down. So they're long days, but it's just really how the sport has evolved. I think a lot of the bigger programs feel that a 54-hole tournament has more oomph or more credence as to a 36-hole tournament. That if you can win a, you know, 54 holes, obviously, you know, it separates the men from the boys. That I think was their thought process. And personally, I still feel that a 36-hole tournament is enough. And, you know, if you can win a 36-hole tournament, that's pretty good. But sometimes you have to go with the flow. And if you want to play at the Penn State tournament, you know, you need to play 54 holes. So,
do you remember the early years coaching? Is there a moment, a first time, because you talked about, you know, going from more driving the bus to maybe being more critical and more try this, stuff like that. First time you felt like you made an impact on a player's performance? Like a tweak you did or something you suggested that resonated, that you saw the light bulb go off? Is there one that sticks as like your first one where you kind of put your flag down as the coach?
It's a good question, but I don't think so. There's not really one that I could put my finger to. I think a lot of my former players to this day, and especially in the last couple of weeks as I've gotten to see them again and talk to them and we hung out together, that, you know, they would say, "Hey, coach, you were a lifesaver. You may not have realized it, but you helped me, you know, immensely, you know, just in their individual journeys." So, you know, when I hear that stuff, it really makes me feel good. But I don't think I can say that, you know, that I took Michael McDermott and pulled him aside and said, "Michael, try this," and it all of a sudden it lit a fire under him. You know, most of these guys didn't need any I mean, they're all very golfers are very self-motivated and all want to perform to their highest level. So, but I don't think there's any one thing that I hit a light bulb and to a kid and changed his whole demeanor, whole life, so to speak.
If I were to hang out with you at one of your tournaments, how does the day go? Are you hanging out at the tee box for the most part and then maybe to a certain hole and watching players come through? Do you hang back? Do you let them, you know, day of, do you let them come to you? Kind of what's your approach? What is your style from the coaching position on the day of competition?
Good question, Matt. And I'm asked that quite often by people as to what does your day consist of. And I think part of that is they know that I'm not this swing guru. So especially day of competition, you know, you're not saying much to the players. You're getting them started. You're making sure they make their tee times. And yeah, a lot of it is you're standing on par threes, where the way college golf works is you play five guys. Most of the tournaments, you play five guys, you count your four best scores, and your five guys are in groups one after another. So the easiest and quickest way to see everybody is to, say, be on a par three as each one comes up. And a lot of the guys would like to know their teammate, you know, before them, what did they hit? What club did they hit? You know, was the wind blowing then as it's blowing now? And yeah, you're guiding them. You're answering their questions if they ask questions. A lot of times they'll step up and know exactly what they want to do, and I stand back and clap when they, you know, put it 2 feet from the hole or something like that. So you do a lot of that. You spend some time walking with some guys. They'll probably say, "Hey, coach, you know, just can you hang with me for the next hole or two?" So you're hanging with one guy, but four other guys are doing their thing. A lot different than, you know, trying to mesh five guys on a basketball court. You know, it's like track. You know, how fast can you run? Golf is, you know, how low can you shoot? So you spend some time individually, and then you spend some time as a group when you can. But yeah, I think most coaches they'll stay back. You'll help them read a putt or two if they ask. And again, many times they don't. So my policy was that they'll ask for help if they want it, but if not, let them do their thing. And it seemed to work. It worked for us anyway. I think coaches obviously have all different styles. Some are more hands on than others, but I found it to be, you know, more of a guiding guy, guiding light.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Bob Lynch coming up in just a few moments. But right now, there is nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Bob Lynch, who just retired after 35 years as the head men's golf coach at St. Joseph's University.
Given that this was not something that you were proactively pursuing, the idea of becoming a coach, how long do you feel like it took you before you became comfortable with everything, and especially recruiting? Because that is something I would imagine when you start, you're kind of like, okay, where do I start? So how many years would you say until you really felt like you kind of found your pace, found your rhythm? Not that you had figured everything out, but you knew what the job entailed and what it took to do it well.
Yeah, I would say, so I'm going back. So if I started the 88-89 season, you know, just adopted guys that obviously were already at school and in the program. But it took to the mid-90s, I would think, later 90s, when I had gotten a hold of Michael McDermott. He got out in 97. So I guess this was 93. He was coming out of Haverford High School, and so a local kid, which is a good majority of our players over the years, obviously, are local kids. But it's like word of mouth. I don't get a chance to get out to high school tournaments once in a while, maybe, but you're getting resumes from kids. You know, you're getting, God, were emails back then? I guess emails.
Probably just started.
There you go. So we got letters from kids. You got phone calls from their coaches. Hey, I know this kid that plays over here. You know, just, you know, you might want to talk to him. He's a pretty good high school player. So, yeah, it took me, I would say, 5-6 years to get comfortable and in a way that I would get into a routine and you know, start following the high school seasons. And obviously, even then, the Philadelphia Gap, the Golf Association of Philadelphia, would run tournaments in the summer for high school kids, junior kids, and so you would see scores and who did what. And you would ask the kids on the team, hey, who do you know? You know, who have you played with that you think could play here at St. Joe's, you know? You know our talent level, you know what we are looking for scores. So yeah, you guys do my recruiting, you know, help me with my recruiting, so to speak. And to this day it still works that way. I mean, my current roster are kids who know each other, who have played junior golf against each other. And so I think recruiting-wise, that's probably our biggest plus. And again, it's not 100% local. You know, I've had some players from San Diego and players from New Hampshire and from Florida. So knowing that St. Joe's isn't a hotbed for golf, because our weather isn't all that great, especially in the spring. But again, I revert back to just a good combination of academics and good competition. I take a lot of pride in the fact that over the years, you know, I set a schedule that was probably tough for us. We played against some really good schools, and it wasn't that important to me to finish 1, 2, or 3. Obviously, it's a goal. It's a goal all the time. But if we finish last or next to last, did we play good? You know, did we play our best? Did we try? But we played against James Madison, and we played against Navy, and we played against San Diego State. You know, you guys got a chance to see some good competition. So yeah, setting a schedule was, I think that helped. And that helps with the recruiting too. And when kids see who you play and where you go and things like that, it certainly helps the whole package.
How has coaching affected your enjoyment of playing? Has it heightened it? Are there times where you don't want to play because it's been a busy few weeks with tournaments and you need a break from the sport? Or has it really had no effect? Do you think you probably would be playing as much, however much you play, whether you had coached or not coached?
Great, great question. I think it's over the years, I don't play as much as I used to. I do still enjoy outings and hanging out with whether it's my own sons or my buddies or fellow coaches, my former players. So I still enjoy playing. I think over the years, after you see these kids and how good they are, and how good they hit it, how good they strike the ball. And I know myself can't do the same things that they do. Does it discourage me? Maybe a little bit. Like, I don't want to go out there and hack it around and just shoot 90 or 100. And so there's times that I've kind of laid back and said, nah, I don't need to do that. And then there's other times. And now I think I'd probably like to spend more time, maybe not playing, but practicing and getting better at striking the ball myself. I was never a good ball striker, which I was never taught. My dad took me golfing, but never really instructed me the way instructors do with kids today. So there are times when I think, yeah, I don't need to spend 5 hours, especially in bad weather. I'm at that stage now where I don't need to play golf, but still enjoy the game and the camaraderie that comes with it. And the couple beers afterwards or during, if it's an outing. Even now, I say to people all the time, there's not a better place to spend a day if it's a beautiful day on a beautiful green golf course with maybe some water intertwined. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a world-class venue. It just needs to be with some friends, and it's a good way to spend a day.
Do you have a favorite course? Like, if you could only play one course the rest of your life or attend one course, like, do you have a favorite?
I've had an opportunity and I've been lucky enough to play Pine Valley and to play Marion and to play Torrey Pines out in San Diego, Bethpage up in New York. And I would have to say Marion, Matt. Marion's probably one of my favorites. I played Pine Valley once and it was too hard for me. You know, I spent the day in the pines. You know, it's called Pine Valley for a reason, and so I spent the day. It wasn't a nice day weather wise, and I wasn't playing good, so I didn't enjoy it. Obviously, a great golf course, but for around here, Marion is tops, and view wise, Torrey Pines, Pebble Beach. I've never played Pebble Beach, but we've been to Pebble Beach and the view. So the views are spectacular at many of these places. But yeah, I've been lucky in that regard.
Now, in addition to the golf, you also are the shot clock guy for basketball at Hagen Arena. How did that come about?
Yeah, again, I guess I had been coaching golf maybe for 5 to 6, 7, 8 years when Ellen Ryan said our women's shot clock operators, you know, can't do it anymore, and we're looking for, you know, someone to do it. Would you like to do it? I said, sure. Sounds like fun. She knew I was a basketball guy, and my early years of coaching, I would probably spend more time hanging around, well, the field house then, before it was Hagen, you know, watching the women's practices or watching the men's practices and getting to know the players. And you know, I would consider Phil Martelli a good buddy and a good friend, and Cindy Griffin as well. So she saw me just hanging around and thought I might want to do it. So I started doing the women's games. And after, it was probably only 2 years when the men's operator decided to retire. And so I started doing the men's games. And yeah, lo and behold, so I do men and women and love it. It's a good seat in the house. And again, I enjoy watching the games, and when they're good, as they are nowadays, it's even more fun to be part of it. And I think I'm going back to when my brother Tommy played from 1966 to 1970 and played, you know, with the likes of Mike Hauer and Danny Kelly and Billy McFadden, and the list goes on and on. That over the years, I've gotten to know and to be with a lot of the basketball alumni. Not only do they come once a year to a game and get recognized, I see them a lot at golf outings. Over the years, there's been a Jack Ramsey outing that Don DeGiulia has helped continue, and you see a lot of the former players. So I had fun with that, and yeah, the shot clock is just it's fun. And it's a little nerve-wracking at times, but you feel like you're part of the game, which you know you are. I mean, you get to know the refs a little bit and the other coaches, and I enjoy that part.
I'm just curious, is there one coach, basketball coach from your job running the clock that passed St. Joe's coaches, visiting coaches, that has made an impression on you with their antics, their humor, whatever on the sidelines? Like, is there one or two that just really jump out as it was an experience watching them for 2 hours?
Yeah. There's been many. There's been guys like, you know, Speedy Morris, who is a good friend, and you know, I enjoyed watching him throw his sport coat into the stands after a play or after a call. Phil had his moments, obviously. I tell people a lot that I admire Danny Hurley, obviously. The guy can obviously coach, but there were a few years, obviously, when he coached Rhode Island and would visit the Fieldhouse or Hagen. And I'd say, man, you know, boy, he's tough. You know, he's tough. I wasn't a big fan of his and his antics, as you had pointed out, but have grown to admire and to understand, I think, when you see some of these guys, some of their actions, you kind of realize that they're doing it. I don't think they're doing it for applause or recognition. They're doing it because that's in their blood, and that's the way they coach. And some guys are a little more fiery than others. But yeah, there are a few of the coaches that just jump out at me right now.
So when you think of your 35 years as golf coach, I ask you favorite memories. Are there a couple of moments that rise to the top? Like, are there specific things that jump out as they would be the top things, you know, in the looking back at your career?
Yeah. Obviously, I think back to some of the tournaments that we did win. We didn't have many team wins over the years, but we had a handful that you're always pretty proud of. But I think the individual players, again, I revert back to the kids themselves. And I've always mentioned when I'm asked questions that, you know, Michael McDermott jumps out as a favorite who was good as a college player and obviously has had a tremendous amateur career over the last 25 years in the Philadelphia area. Billy Stewart is another one of my favorites who came in as a freshman and won the Atlantic 10 as a freshman. So that was in 2003 when that was the closest we came to winning a conference championship. We got eked out by Xavier that year, but we had the lead going into the final round, and Billy and Sean Cease and were a good 1-2 punch that we had, and we came home with some hardware that year. I was coach of the year. Billy was rookie of the year. Billy was player of the year. That stands out as a highlight. A little more recent, Michael O'Brien, who actually got caught in the pandemic. So pandemic came in the spring of 2020. So the fall of 2019, he was a senior, and we were down in the Outer Banks playing in an Old Dominion tournament at a course called Kilmarnock, a real nice golf course down there. And Michael ended up winning the tournament after firing a 61 in his last round. He was 10 under par. He had 10 birdies, no bogeys. And man, if there was a day that I said, wow, I want to bottle this up. And I was with him. We had talked earlier about whether I hang on par threes or whether I walk, you know, with guys. I pretty much stayed with him that day once he made the turn. I don't know if he was 500 at the turn or something, but you just knew it was a special day and was going to be a special day. And it just kept getting better and better. And he actually had a chance at shooting 60, but a 61 that you don't see very often. I mean, I've never seen it personally, and that was obviously that stands out because it's a little more recent. You know, I can't remember yesterday a lot of times, let alone what happened 35 years ago, but they were some of the performance highlights that kind of stick out.
So we mentioned early on you'll still be working Spikes Trophies. What else is on the agenda for your post golf coach life? Do you have some things you want to check off?
Yeah, I obviously have some weekends in the fall and weekends in the spring to find stuff to do. My wife Monica and I, we have a house in North Wildwood that we're pretty much living at 85% of the time. I have an apartment up here in the Northeast Philadelphia that's close to where I work at Spikes. So that's just easy. And, you know, we have a lot of events up this way with we have five kids of our own, 16 grandchildren and one on the way, which is quite the something. There's a birthday party or a Holy Communion or a graduation every week. I mean, and when I say every week, we've seen each, and it's great. And all my kids are local. I get that question asked all the time from people that, you know, do you see your kids much? I said, yeah, we see our kids all the time. We had a birthday party last Saturday. We got Mother's Day this Saturday, and they're all in the area, which is nice because you talk to other people and they have a son in Texas and a daughter in California, and they may have a couple grandchildren that they only see once or twice a year. And we see so we're always going to games. You know, they're all involved with every sport from lacrosse to soccer to basketball and baseball. So we're at games when we can get to them and family events. So they take up a lot of our time. And yeah, I think maybe we'll travel a little bit more on some of those weekends that I would normally be with the golf team. And I'd like to think that I think I may obviously stay involved with the program. You know, I think Terry and I get along real well, and I think I'll just be there for support to help him get going as he starts his own journey with the program. And, you know, especially the local events, you know, I'll pop over and show my support. But yeah, I don't think we'll have many times that we're not doing anything, you know.
And what will you miss most about the job, about not being the coach anymore?
Yeah, I'm going to miss the kids. I'm going to miss the coaches. You know, I'm going to miss the staff at St. Joe's. You know, a lot of my friends from school, you know, have moved on, have retired themselves. But we still stay in touch, which is nice. But yeah, I think hanging around college kids obviously kept me young over the years and you know, made me feel good. I laughed at their crazy stories that they would tell in the van. But to this day, you know, a good majority are my best friends, and just seeing them grow and now their families grow. And that's, you know, that's what I'll miss the most. But obviously the memories are there. But yeah, I'm going to make it a point to really stay involved, keep in touch, and really be around as much as I can.
Bob Lynch, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Matt, it's been a pleasure. A lot of fun. Thanks.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Bob Lynch for coming in studio and talking about his 35 years as the head men's golf coach at St. Joseph's University. Enjoy your retirement. Now, if you like the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at Matt Leon 1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at Ring.com.